lay on its face. The others stared with half-eaten features at the sun. Their skin, or what remained of it, was a swarthy yellow. Both were clad in short purple breeks and sailor's boots, being otherwise naked. "What hellishness is this?" inquired the master. "These men are but newly dead, and already the crabs rend them. Such creatures are wont to wait for the softening of decomposition, and look, they do not even devour the morsels they have torn, but bear them away." This indeed was true, for I saw now that a constant procession of crabs departed from the bodies, each carrying a shred of flesh to vanish beyond the rocks, while another procession came, or perhaps returned, with empty pincers. "I think," said Mira Lumavi, "that the man with the upturned face is the sailor that I saw leaving Sarkhan's room, the thief who had stolen the chart for Sarkhan from its owner. In my horror and disgust, I picked up a fragment of rock and was about to crush some of the hideously laden crabs as they crawled away from the corpses. Nay," the master stayed me, "let us follow them." Rounding the great heap of boulders, we saw that the twofold procession entered and emerged from the mouth of a cavern that had heretofore been hidden from view. With hands tightening on the hilts of our arcanes, we went cautiously and circumspectly toward the cavern and paused a little short of its entrance. From this vantage, however, nothing was visible within except the lines of crawling crabs.
"Enter!"
cried a sonorous voice that seemed to prolong and repeat the word in far-receding reverberations like the voice of a ghoul echoing in some profound sepulchral vault. The voice was that of the sorcerer Sarkhan. The master looked at me with volumes of warning in his narrowed eyes, and we entered the cavern. The place was high-domed and of indeterminable extent. Light was afforded by a great rift in the vault above, through which at this hour the direct rays of the sun slanted in, falling goldenly on the cavern's foreground, and tipping with light the great fangs of stalactites and stalagmites in the gloom beyond. At one side was a pool of water, fed by a thin rill from a spring that drifts somewhere in the darkness. With the shafted splendor shining full upon him, Sarkhan reposed, half-sitting, half-recumbent, with his back against an open chest of age-darkened bronze. His huge ebon-black body, powerfully muscled, though inclining toward corpulence, was nude, except for a necklace of rubies, each the size of a plover's egg, that depended about his throat. His crimson sarong, strangely tattered, bared his legs as they lay outstretched amid the cavern's rubble. The right leg had manifestly been broken somewhere below the knee, for it was rudely bound with splints of driftwood and strips torn from the sarong. Sarkhan's cloak of lazuli-colored silk was outspread beside him. It was strewn with graven gems and amulets, with gold coins and jewel-crusted altar vessels that flashed and glittered amid volumens of parchments and papyrus. A book with black metal covers lay open as if newly put aside, showing illuminations drawn in fiery ancient inks. Beside the book, within reach of Sarkhan's fingers, was a mound of raw and bloody shreds. Over the cloak, over the coins and scrolls and jewels, crawled the incoming lines of crabs, each of which added its torn-off morsel to the mound and then crept on to join the outgoing column. I could well believe the tales regarding Sarkhan's ancestry. Indeed, it seemed that he favored his mother entirely, for his hair and features as well as his skin were those of the Negro cannibals of Na'at, as I had seen them depicted in travelers' drawings. He fronted us inscrutably, his arms crossed on his bosom. I noticed a great emerald shining darkly on the index finger of his right hand.
"I knew that you would follow me," he said, "even as I knew that the thief and his companion would follow. All of you have thought to slay me and take the treasure. It is true that I have suffered an injury. A fragment of loosened rock fell from the cavern roof, breaking my leg as I bent over to inspect the treasures in the open chest. I must lie here till the bone has knit. In the meanwhile, I am well armed and well served and guarded. We came to take the treasure, replied Mir Lunavi directly. I had thought to slay you, but only in fair combat, man to man and wizard to wizard, with none but my neophyte Mantar and the rocks of Erebos for witness. Aye, and your neophyte is also armed with an Arte. However, it matters little. I shall feast on your liver, Mir Lunavi, and wax stronger by such power of sorcery as was yours. This the master appeared to disregard. What foulness have you conjured now? He inquired sharply, pointing to the crabs who were still depositing their morsels on the grisly mound. Sarkand held aloft the hand on whose index finger gleamed the immense emerald, set as we now perceived in a ring that was wrought with the tentacles of a kraken clasping the orb-like gem. I found this ring amid the treasure, he boasted. It was closed in a cylinder of unknown metal together with a scroll that informed me of the ring's uses and its mighty magic. It is the signet ring of Bas-Satan, the sea god. He who looks long and deeply into the emerald may behold distant scenes and happenings at will. He who wears the ring can exert control over the winds and currents of the sea, and over the sea's creature by describing certain signs in air with his finger. While Sarkand spoke, it seemed that the green jewel brightened and darkened and deepened strangely, like a tiny window with all the sea's mystery and immensity lying beyond. Enthralled and entranced, I forgot the circumstances of our situation, for the jewel swelled upon my vision, blotting from view the black fingers of Sarkand, with a swirling as of tides and of shadowy fins and tentacles far down in its glimmering greenness. Beware, Mantar, the master murmured in my ear.